Who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler? If you think we're on the run.
Welcome to another edition of the Dad's Army Podcast. This is episode 8, and today is Saturday the 1st of September 2007. Very shortly, I'll be joined by Tony, and we'll then head over to the Dad's Army newsroom to discuss what's new in the world of Dad's Army. There's been quite a lot to discuss this last fortnight. I guess this is due to the forthcoming stage play, which is due to open this coming Monday. So Dad's Army has been in the news more than usual. We've also received a high number of emails. We've received the most emails from our listeners we ever have over the last 2 weeks, so thank you very much if you've got in contact with us. It's much appreciated. We've then got the results of our very first competition, and we'll announce the winner live on air. And that's before we move into discussion of our featured episode this week, which this fortnight is A Soldier's Farewell. So sit back and enjoy another half an hour or so of benign banter with me, James, and my good friend Tony.
But he comes home each evening and he's ready with his gun. So who do you think you are kidding, Mr.?
So what benign banter are you going to talk about then, James?
Sorry, I shouldn't have said benign banter. I should have said highly informed discussion about a stalwart of British comedy. Anyway, how are you, Tony?
I'm fine. Are you okay?
Not too bad. A little bit bright and early in the morning for me, as always. We should really record these in the evening, I think, Tony.
James, it's 11 o'clock.
This is the middle of the night for me. Anyway, let's move on.
We've got some news.
We have indeed.
Here is the news, and this is John Snagg reading it.
I think John Snagg sounds a bit like you there, James. We've got some news, anyway. We've got a Jimmy Perry interview on the BBC website about the stage play. It's about 8 minutes long. And, James, I believe you can put a link on our website so people can listen to that.
Yeah, yeah.
James, we both listened to it. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, the article is in two pieces, really. There's quite a long article, so we won't go through it as we normally do with articles. It's about 4 pages if you print it out. And it's also got a 7 or 8 minute interview, as you say, with Jimmy Perry. And my thoughts were just that he still sounds incredibly passionate about the show he created. Doesn't seem to have lost any interest in it at all, and is really keen to go along and make certain he can give advice to the production company who were putting on these plays.
Yeah, and he said that he wasn't going to interfere either. He recognised the fact that he didn't want to be telling them what to do all the time, so he was there to give support and help, but he wasn't going to tamper and interfere. Dad's Army, it reminds us of a time, our finest hour. It reflects so well the whole theme, makes people feel good about it. It tells a story that was totally true. He said, we were on our own, our backs to the wall, and we didn't give in, and that's it. But the characters are real. You've met them all over the place. And it's that bit that, for me, is true. We have met these characters all over the place.
True. I think what struck me was the way that Jimmy Perry referred to the war. And we've talked about it in the past, whereby, you know, every now and again the seriousness of the wartime is brought into the programme. And even in this interview, within the first paragraph, Jimmy Perry starts talking about, you know, what it was like to be in Britain's Home Guard. Because, of course, Jimmy Perry was in the Home Guard, wasn't he?
He was Pike.
Yes, I don't think he was Pike within the Home Guard. Oh, maybe he was. Actually, he did base the character of Pike on himself, didn't he? I think probably just exaggerated him a little. One of the other things about this article is that there's a number of photographs of Dad's Army, but it also includes a picture of Peter Martin in uniform as Captain Mannerin, and Peter Martin is playing Mannerin in the touring stage play, and I think I'm right in saying that's the first photograph of the new cast in uniform.
We've got another interview to mention, the Leslie Grantham interview.
But before we get into discussing that news item, I'd like to play for our listeners just a little piece of the Jimmy Perry interview.
These two episodes, they've never been found. The whole show, the stage show, consists of 3 episodes that David Croft and I have adapted for theatre. And the third one is The Deadly Attachment, Don't Tell Him, Pike. But the other 2 episodes haven't been seen since the first time they went out, 68, 69.
That was Jimmy Perry being interviewed by Katie Lewis of the BBC for the Beds, Hearts and Bucks BBC website, and you can listen to the whole of that interview from the link that I'll paste on our website, which is www.dadsarmy.podomatic.com. A story that was brought to our attention by one of our listeners, Tony, a chap called Nick Rich. Thanks, Nick, for getting in touch. It was an interview that went out on BBC News Southeast. I think it was late last week, it was Wednesday or Thursday, whereby they interviewed Leslie Grantham, Peter Martin and Ed O'Driscoll about the new stage play. It's a short interview, I think it's only a few minutes long. I thought it was really interesting, so I was really pleased, Nick, that you brought it to our attention. Tony, you've had a chance to see this now, haven't you?
I know we've both seen it, but if you haven't seen it, you've got to go and look at it, because you see the cast on stage rehearsing, so for that reason, you've got to go and watch it. One of the things that came out in the interview was that Leslie, they do a practice parade, or they do a practice drill, and so you see Leslie Grantham leading the platoon, which of course Walker would probably never lead the platoon in anything.
Well, they said in the news item that they begin every rehearsal with a parade, just to try and get them into the feel of the platoon. What did you think of the hall that they were rehearsing in? It looked like a school hall to me.
No, I didn't even notice it.
I just had these visions of when they rehearsed to be in some kind of... well, I actually thought it was actually going to be in a theatre. And, of course, that's ridiculous, I suppose, because it's a complete waste of money renting a theatre just to rehearse in. Did you see Leslie Grantham's moustache?
I missed that as well. I must have seen it, but I just didn't notice it.
But it was very subtle, and I'm wondering whether he's halfway through growing it, or whether it was just a... no, actually, we know it's a fake moustache, because when
I
we interviewed Ed...
it's a stick-on one.
It is, yeah. And they actually interviewed Peter Martin as well, and just got his thoughts on how he felt about portraying Mannerin and what a responsibility he felt. So
a very good resemblance as well, I think.
Yes, I thought his voice was much softer, but perhaps he can project his voice much better when he's in a theatre.
Yes, perhaps. They mentioned in the interview that the stage play is based on four episodes, and we actually think it's based on three episodes, just two of the, the two lost episodes, and the Don't Tell Him Pike episode, and the title of that episode has just disappeared off my brain for a minute.
Ah, Deadly Attachment.
I thought it was you that had the hangover as well, and we've also, we'll post a link to that interview on our website. Christmas specials, I think the dates have changed slightly. The box set comes out on the 29th of October. It's all DVD. And the Christmas specials released on the 12th of November. Not the dates we gave out in the last podcast. Sorry about that.
The box set that you referred to there, this is a relatively new release that I found out about anyway. I mean, I think it was inevitable, really. As soon as they got round to releasing all of the individual series, they were going to release them together as a box set. That box set will include the Christmas specials, so I guess it's just a bit of a incentive to buy the whole box set again, and then the Christmas specials get their individual release a couple of weeks after that. And again, Tony, I'll post a couple of links on the website to the Amazon entries for those releases.
Yeah, thank you. I don't mind giving Perry and Croft a little bit more money.
Yeah, I think I'll stop short of spending £80 on a box set, though. Moving on, lastly, just two more things in the newsroom this week. The Whispers on Warmington website is, it would have closed by now, which is a fairly popular fan site. It's also got a forum. There's two stages to it, or there's two parts to the website. And the forum's going to be remaining open, which is good, so I'm a member of that member of that forum, and it's a really good place to exchange Dad's Army information. And it's a shame, because the Whispers from Warmington website, the part that's not the forum, contained a wealth of information, and it's been maintained really, really well over the years. And lastly, this week, our final item is to announce our competition winner.
Yeah, we asked a question of which member of the original Dad's Army TV cast was a member of the Royal Home Guard during World War II.
Indeed, and we had loads of entries, so thank you for everyone sending in the various answers to that question. It's strange, because we did have quite a number of wrong answers. We had 47 entries in total.
I think there was probably a bit of guessing going on.
Possibly. But we've filtered down just to the correct answers now, and you may be able to hear me rustling papers here. I'm just going to pick out one with... hopefully, I've selected just the right answers here. Here we go. And the winner is, of the Dad's Army DVD, series 1 and 2 is David Michaela from Bristol. Congratulations, David. If you can just send me an email with your address, then we'll get that in the post to you. The correct answer to that competition was John Laurie. He was the only member of the original cast in the real Home Guard. That just about wraps up our news section this week, Tony. Moving on to our feedback we've received from our listeners. I'm pleased to say we've received a high number of emails from our listeners this week, and we'll go through a few of them now. First one is from Andrew Lampkin, and he says, "Hello, really enjoying the podcasts. They're a great idea, long overdue. Timely as well with all the DVD releases and so on, and some really interesting discussions. But without wanting to sound like a plonker, I'm wondering if there's any chance of you getting access to slightly better microphones to record the podcasts. I'm not talking about thousands of pounds worth, of course, just enough to take the harsh and jagged edge off the sound of the recordings. I would love to keep the podcast for repeated listening, and this would make them just that more of a pleasure to have. Many thanks, Andrew." Thanks ever so much, Andrew, for sending in your email. You're quite right. It is a shame that the podcasts don't have a real high-quality sound. I think it's more to do with the recording software we use rather than the microphones, however. We've tried to improve the sound quality, and I think we've made some progress since the early podcasts. But, yeah, your point is well made.
My mate Brian Henshaw's written in. This is the friend who fell down a hole on the beach. James, he's currently in hospital with a nosebleed, so I'm going to read this one out in his honour. Brian says, "Dad's Army was voted into fourth place in a 2004 BBC poll for Britain's best sitcom, and previously in a list of the 100 greatest British television programmes drawn up by the British Film Institute in 2000, voted for by industry professionals, it was placed 13th. So thank you, Brian, for commenting on the polls that we were talking about in the last podcast, and get well soon.
I think this the one he mentions there, Tony, was one in 2004. The poll that we were talking about the last podcast, Dad's Army, didn't even feature. So I think it's good. I mean, we were saying that it's a little bit of a shame that Dad's Army wasn't included in the top 10, which is where, you know, you and I and most of our listeners would have expected it to be. But fourth place a few years ago is very good. And I think it probably depends on, you know, how the polling organisation actually collate their data and how they ask people. Maybe they give them multiple choice or something, and perhaps Dad's Army wasn't on the most recent one. But yes, thanks, Brian. Sorry to hear you're not well, and we wish you all the best. We have received another email from Nick Rich. We received a couple, actually, concerning a couple of things that, I mean, as I said, Nick brought the video that was online that we discussed slightly earlier in the podcast to our attention, and he's mentioned a couple of other things as well. Have you heard of something called the Barmy Army, Tony?
They follow cricket around for some reason, don't they?
Well, when I thought that, I thought he was referring to Cardiff City Football Club, who called themselves the Barmy Army, but apparently not. I asked Nick what exactly the Barmy Army were, and he says, if I just read part of his email here, he says, "The Barmy Army." He says, "Mention them on your podcast and watch the emails come in." So, okay, I'm going to be watching now. apparently, what they do is carry on making Dad's Army stories. Some of the TV Dad's Army cast have guest appeared in the DVDs, such as Bill Pertwee, Frank Williams, and Pamela Cundall. They made the Colin Bean interview video and Jimmy Perry interview, and apparently they're an organisation that continue to make New Dad's Army. Now, that's a brand new one on me, Tony. I take it you haven't heard of them either.
I'm wondering why I haven't heard of them before, but interesting.
Well, trying to do a little bit of research, trying to do some searches on the Barmy Army, and all I got is sports. So, Nick, if you've got any more information on that, or if you can direct us to a website, then perhaps we can discuss that in a little more detail in a future podcast. That wraps up the emails that we've received. However, those of you who download the podcast from iTunes will realise that there's an opportunity to review our podcast on iTunes as well. And we've got two reviews on there so far, so I'm just going to read these out. First of which is slightly critical, we have to say. I mean, you might get that in the tone of what he actually says. It's posted by someone called Nathan, and he's entitled his review, "Do Not Subscribe." And his review is, "This podcast is one of the worst I have ever heard, and is not what you think, and is not what you think it is." And he's given us 1 star out of 5. So I thought, oh, that's a bit of a shame. Very sorry, Nathan. I'm not quite sure what it is that you were believing it to be, but I'm glad.
Nathan, if you'd write in, give us your address.
Yeah, we'll come and see you. Fortunately, our listener numbers actually disagree with that view. We're increasing in numbers, and we've always been a very amateur podcast, and we got no problem in saying that. And I'm sorry you didn't like it. However, that's kind of countered by the other review that we've received, which, again, is not a real name. Someone's put their name as The Pen of Bo. I'm not quite sure.
They were too embarrassed to give their real name.
Possibly, but it's a nice review, Tony. Here we go. The previous review is most unfair. The presenters are clearly passionate about the programme, and I find their views entertaining and interesting. It's a great place to get all the latest news on Dad's Army, and most unlike any other fan website, it is kept bang up to date with one new episode coming out every 2 weeks. The presenters also have really good interviews. They interviewed the producer of the new stage play recently in one of their best podcasts yet, and got casting exclusives way ahead of the national papers, who have been following the production closely.
Did you write that one?
No, not a bad one. I could have done, couldn't I? Anyway, he hasn't finished yet. He's got, if you like Dad's Army, then this is the most live, up-to-date place to get your regular fix. Not sure what the first reviewer wanted, but there is nothing quite like this show anywhere else. An absolute must for anyone who follows Dad's Army. So I was quite happy to read out the first review, knowing that I had the second review to read out as well. If you'd like to go in to iTunes, you need to have an iTunes address, but if you can sign in and leave your thoughts on the podcast, then hopefully that will get our listenership numbers up via the iTunes podcatcher. That wraps up the reviews this week and feedback from our listeners. Before we get into the discussion on this week's featured episode, which is A Soldier's Farewell, we've got a couple of comments that our listeners have sent in purely to discuss prior to this conversation. Now, Tony and I, this is where we have to let you into a secret, we've already recorded the discussion, so we won't be able to include the comments in the general discussion, but I would like to read them out. Well, thanks again, Paul. We're going to call you our Australian correspondent from now on. Hi, James and Tony. Many thanks for the great discussion on Put That Light Out. I very much enjoyed your thoughts. Oh, and Paul Carpenter's views too. Thanks, Paul. That set me straight on the lighthouse prop. I think Paul mentioned that he thought the lighthouse prop may have been used in the Goodies, a Goodies episode. I can't say A Soldier's Farewell was high on my list of favourites, although, as I never really do enjoy the departure into other period costume and the dream scenes, which I think, as we'll find out, reflects some of your feelings about the episode, Tony. Nevertheless, I think this is a well-written episode, and I think the only one where we see Mrs. Mannerin. Well, her outline in the top bunk at least, and again, it's something we discuss in our discussion. I particularly enjoyed the toasted cheese supper scene, Captain Mannerin, Sergeant Wilson and Jones sharing their meagre rationed goodies. I felt it introduced some warmth and depth into the characters, which I completely agree with you. I love that scene. I thought there were some funny lines, complete with a few deliberately awful LOLO French-style accents, happening between the platoon on the bus ride home, and some good old-fashioned slapstick with Captain Mannerin getting trampled by the platoon on two occasions. I think it's three occasions, actually, Paul. But yes, he does seem to get bowled over by his platoon far too frequently.
I think we catch the slightest glimpse of Mrs. Mannerin in another episode.
Ah, okay. Well, that'd be interesting. Do you want to say which one? Or do you not remember?
I might be wrong, but I think the king was in his counting house. I think we catch the very slightest glimpse as she's running downstairs and out the door.
I know you definitely hear her. I'm not too sure whether you see any part of her, but you could be right. We'll have to take a look at that one. Paul rounds off his email by saying, we also get to see Captain Mannerin's chivalrous side in his defence of the Clippy and his loyalty to the king and country in the opening scene, where the platoon's flagrant disrespect for the national anthem and the platoon's subsequent reprimanding and punishment of having to repeatedly listen to God Save the Queen after parade. To sum up, not a bad except Napoleonic departure, which I think is what you think, Tony. I give this a 3 out of 5. And my wife has now answered the phone now, so I do apologise for... Anyway, Paul rounds off saying, cheers, guys. And lastly, just PS, the costume and makeup department must have had their work cut out on this one.
But we still have 2 hours together. Why don't we have a farewell toasted cheese supper?
Just cheese supper. Just you and I.
Please, give me something to remember you by. A likeness, perhaps.
Take this. Think of me sometime.
I shall keep it always.
You punched me on the nose.
That was a clip from this week's features episode, A Soldier's Farewell. That was the last sequence of Madarin's dream there, Tony.
Where is he? So this is the end of the episode. They're not on the battlefield anymore, are they?
No, they're on a deck of a boat, I think, or something like that.
That's right.
All of Mannering's experiences over the previous 30 minutes or so have suddenly come to culminate in this dream sequence, and this was the final part whereby the Clippy on the bus features as well.
Again, he's being unfaithful in his heart, isn't he? Dissatisfied with Mrs. Mannering, but he's done it before, hasn't he?
He has indeed, but I have a feeling that may well have been after this episode.
No.
Was it not?
No, he's already done it.
You got your continuity sorted much better than mine there. So.
Mum's Army, Series 4, and this one's Series 5.
Oh, well, you've done your research this time. Before we get into the emotional side of things, Tony, what do you think? What's the overall feeling for you on this episode?
I was going to leave my score till the end, but if you miss out the dream sequence towards the end, I know it's quite a major part of the episode, but if you miss out that dream sequence, I'm giving this episode 5 out of 5.
Oh, really? Okay. I did wonder, because I remember you saying in the past that you liked this, which is why I asked you what you thought originally. I will save my score till the end. I agree. I do think it's a really, really strong episode for a number of different reasons. The first of which, I think, is that... it is not just true of this particular episode. I think it's true of this series, Series 5. Jimmy Perry and David Croft, I think, actually flex the emotional muscles of the characters a little more than they've done in the past. And let me see if I can make this point, Tony, by asking you... if someone would ask you to describe Mannering's main characteristics, what are the first things you would say?
Well, everyone says pompous, don't they? But that's two. Everyone says that. So apart from that, pompous then.
Yep, no, I would agree. That's the first word that I've written down here. I'd say he's pompous, he's a little bit snobby sometimes, he's full of himself, you know, he's very self-important. But the emotions and the character traits that come to the fore, I think, in this episode are not those areas. I think the things that, the one that's most common to other episodes is his patriotism. Obviously, he's extremely keen on making certain that not just he, but all of his platoon stand to attention to the national anthem.
I think him getting knocked over in the cinema is one of my favourite visual images.
It works quite well, doesn't it?
Not him getting up and straightening his glasses. They do that quite a bit, and that's not the bit I'm talking about, but where he actually gets knocked over, because they do it so subtly. He stands up, and you can almost think he's standing up to rush out with the rest, but they just give you a split second to let you know that he's actually standing up for the national anthem, and immediately gets over.
Yeah, well, it happens on three occasions in this episode. It happens in the cinema, where you talked about, on the bus, when Hodges encourages them to get down the pub quickly, and of course, in his dream sequence as well, so he's trampled underfoot, even in his subconscious. The thing that I really like here is, as I said, is the character traits that you wouldn't necessarily associate with Mannering coming extremely apparent, and I think those are the kind of things, his disappointment, which again you don't normally see so much of. He's disappointed with firstly the platoon because of the disrespect they show the national anthem, and also his wife, because he clearly does like Mrs. Mannering, because he went to a lot of trouble to get the cheese from Walker, you know, so they could have a toasted cheese supper. He's even so proud of what he's done. He lets Wilson sit in the office when he's speaking to his wife.
I'll just give her a call.
Yes, just give her a quick call. And she wasn't interested, and the disappointment Arthur Lowe portrays, I think, is extremely clear and apparent. And I think it works really well. I think it's also, I mentioned earlier, it's not just this episode it works, it's the episode surrounding it, and the episode that follows A Soldier's Farewell is Getting the Bird. And if you remember, that's also an episode where you look at Wilson and Wilson's daughter in a way that you haven't seen Wilson before. So I think there seems to be a concerted effort to actually delve into these characters a little bit more in this series, and just examine how they work on a different level.
you like the serious moments, don't you?
Very much so. One of the moments of thinking A Soldier's Farewell, which is kind of serious, is where they're all sitting in the office. It starts off with just Mannerin and Wilson. Wilson, who's just been shouted at by Mannerin when he inadvertently puts the German national anthem on the gramophone.
Yes.
Suddenly, it doesn't hold any of it against Mannerin, even though Mannerin's really rude to him. And Wilson, mainly because Wilson simply doesn't really care, or wasn't listening, wasn't paying attention. But he says, well, why don't we have your toasted cheese supper? You know, just the two of us.
Well, that is one of my favourite parts of the episode. I think, obviously, Wilson fingering the cheese makes me laugh. There's this lump of cheese on the table, and they're both admiring it, and Wilson lets you put his finger into it.
Yeah, and, well, even Walker says, do try and be a bit more hygienic, Mr. Wilson. And, of course, I think that's, a little bit ahead of its time, because hygiene and health is very, very prominent now. But I like the way that they sit there and they have a chat, and Jones joins them with some kidneys halfway through that scene, and then they break, and obviously during that break they've eaten their supper, and when the next scene opens they've just all finished and they're all very laid back and relaxed. And if you listen, I mean, if you actually make a point of listening to when the audience are laughing, it's not actually very common, because there's nothing that's overtly funny in that scene. And what I assume is that Jimmy Perry and David Croft were trying to make you think there's more to this unit of men rather than just being, you know, soldiers who are there for laughs. They wanted you to think there's a relationship between them.
And they're showing some of the hardship as well, the real hardship that went on in the 1940s with the lack of food.
And
I think you see that again when they're in the air raid shelter, and you see the sort of the beds, the bunk beds that Mr. and Mrs. Mannering sleep on, and the corrugated iron around the edge. Just a couple of times in the episode, things are brought home to you. It wasn't easy then.
No, it's very accurate. As I said, I think Dad's Army portrays the war quite well, or very well. And yeah, you're right, those bunk beds do look like they've just been chucked in a corner of a corrugated iron air raid shelter, and I think it's done quite...
The top bunk didn't look very strong.
No, and it was quite fortunate that Mannerin didn't, you know, knock the springs out when he headbutted his wife's posterior.
I think I'd rather have the top bunk.
Yeah, I think so too. One of the other things I thought was particularly key, and again I may be accused of looking into this too deeply here, but of course they all got the late night bus back, didn't they, from the cinema. And,
yeah, right at the start. We're jumping all over the place with this conversation.
Oh,
yeah, right at the start.
I don't think that matters. I think it's when they're all riding on the bus. Hodges get on and he says, "Oh, we'll have a, you know, I'll have a ticket at the terminus, please." Your Mannerin's horrified at that Hodges would say something like that. And the platoon starts this singing, which is actually, I think, quite good. So, I mean, you know, it's I don't know what right word is, comradeship, I'm not sure, but he puts a stop on that. And I just wonder, if he was horrified at that kind of behaviour, what on earth would he make of behaviour on night buses these days?
You know, so stabbings and...
Absolutely, I think he might be a little bit more concerned, or a little bit less concerned about singing and tickles at the terminus and so on.
Oh, wait, seeing as you mentioned the singing, my top favourite part is the very end of the singing bit, where Wilson is really going for it, really enthusiastically, and he's the last one to shut up. Well, the usual Mannering and Wilson bit between them, the unspoken glances.
But I think you've hit the nail on the head as to why it's funny. It's because, when you mentioned the word enthusiastically there, how often can you accuse Wilson of being enthusiastic?
not very often.
Well, openly and obviously, because I think there are times when he does say, well, actually, I am really interested in this, but I just show it in my own way. But there are very few times when he's overtly enthusiastic about anything, and that's why it's funny. And I think you know the character well enough to not expect some kind of enthusiasm. And, you know, I agree. I think that was I thought that was really funny. I thought Pike's impression of Napoleon, which Fraser describes as rotten, I thought it was really good. Made me smile. I think just shows Ian Lavender's ability to do different accents.
It's good. I suppose you need to know what Napoleon actually sounded like, but yeah.
I liked it. I thought it was good. It was kind of... It wasn't French, I suppose, but it was certainly not the voice Ian Lavender uses for Pike. So yeah. One of the things I've mentioned in the past is that Jones is a very silly character at times, and I wonder sometimes whether the writers really knew what to do with him, you know, just to suddenly start him jumping up and down and making funny noises. But I think he gets a really good deal in this episode. You know, again, in the office, we were talking about it earlier, where Matt Mannerin leaves and he goes home.
Jones has just been telling a story, hasn't he, about when he was in Sudan.
But it's not a really ridiculous story as some that he's done in the past. And it's, you know, there are some of Jones's stories that you could compare with Uncle Albert's stories about the war in Only Fools and Horses. And this wasn't one. This actually was quite... One, it was quite funny, which not all of Jones's speeches are. It wasn't so silly and daft. The reason that I'm making this point is because when Mannerin walks out the office door, Jones looks at Wilson and says, "He's almost human sometimes, isn't he?"
Yes.
And that was, again, it's not a distinctly comic line, but it means a lot. And you look at John Le Mesurier's reaction; he smiles and he nods, and you buy the fact that yes, there is actually real affection between these characters, and even if they end up spending a lot of time saying, "That'll do, be quiet, listen to me, you're in the realms of fantasy, do you think that's wise?" It doesn't matter, because underneath it all, they are friends, even though it's never actually spoken at times.
Yeah, and on a real level, as Mannering is speaking, as he's about to leave the office, you've got Jones and Mannering in the shop, and Jones is literally standing absolutely still, just listening to Mannering, and I just think that there's no acting going on there on Jones's part, on Clive Dunn's part. And I think Clive Dunn is actually just saying, "I want to give Arthur Lowe all the attention in this bit." He doesn't move. He just stands there listening to Arthur.
No, I know what you mean. Yeah, I think it is good. There's lots of individual acting here that you can point to in the main leads, Arthur Lowe, Clive Dunn and John Le Mesurier. There's some good moments for all of them. Moving on to the dream sequence, which you've said in the past you're not so keen on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They put the most effort into as well, which I think is unfortunate. But
sorry, got the most effort, you say?
Well, yeah, I mean, because of all the scenery and dressing up.
Yeah, okay, why is it you don't like it?
For me, it's a departure from what I really enjoy about Dad's Army, which is the quiet conversation and the humour that goes on, whereas this is, I think it's just, perhaps it's all the noise.
I have to admit, I disagree with you. I think it's really good. I do appreciate what you mean, but I think, first of all, it's supposed to be a dream, so it is supposed to be a bit crazy. You know, it's for, what, 7 or 8 minutes of craziness, during which time they've condensed all of the catchphrases of practically every character. You've got Hodges saying, "Put that light out." You've got Godfrey talking about Sister Dolly's upside down cakes. You've got Mannerin calling Pike a stupid drummer boy, which I'm sorry,
yes.
I find that incredibly funny. You've got, again, Hodges saying, "Sign here, Napoleon." And Jones saying, "They don't like it, Oopla," which I suppose is meant to be French. I somehow think that might well have been Clive Dunn's ad-libbing. Within 7 minutes there, or thereabouts, you've got practically everything that those characters are famous for. You know, I think that was quite...
I didn't hear a "We're doomed" from Fraser.
No, that's true, actually. There was no "doomed." I'm not sure whether or not he'd said "doomed" at that point. I think that may have come later on, but not sure. There was also a precursor to another episode here, which
What's
is in
a precursor?
It's in a later series. You remember in My British Buddy? I can't quite remember when that is. That's another couple of series time at least, or possibly even the following series. Wilson talks very clearly to Mannerin, saying, "I don't want you to borrow my pen. I never lend my gold pen to anyone."
It spoils the nib.
That's it. Now, that's the precursor is when Wilson is playing Wellington, and he says, "Well, no, I never lend anyone my pen, not even to Napoleon to sign a surrender." And I thought that was quite, you know, it's an interesting line anyway, but it's funny that they went back and developed that line at a later
yeah.
series.
In the other episode, or in another episode where the pen is being borrowed, Wilson says, "Well, keep a top on."
That was it.
Mannering finds that absolutely ridiculous.
That's still the same one. That's My British Buddy as well. There's a couple of bloopers in this episode as well. Well, I don't know whether you call them bloopers, but I like looking at these. And some of them I pick up myself. Some of them I pick up off other fan sites. But one of the ones that we were talking about the dream sequence, and just before Bonaparte is knocked to the ground, you know, when Mannerin is Bonaparte,
yes,
and you know, drinks everything, there's some overhead electric cables in the background that you can clearly see, and I'm not quite sure what time period this is supposed to be, but I have a feeling it's early 19th century. So I think that's probably quite an achievement to get electric lines up at the same time Napoleon's there. So I don't know whether I take it you didn't see that in the
no.
it's something. It's worthwhile going back and having a look because it is quite clear. you can see it. That's quite funny. Again, I'm going to be accused of jumping around here, but since I'm talking about things I've noticed, you know, when they're talking about singing the national anthem because Wilson couldn't find the appropriate anthem to play.
Yes.
Walker and Pike start singing.
And Gilbert and Sullivan.
Yes. Slightly before that, they start singing "The Punishment Fits the Crime" for Gilbert and Sullivan. But when they sing the national anthem, Pike clearly says "God Save the Queen," and of course,
yes.
Yeah, he does. You can hear it.
Hear
it. And
that
was one that I noticed. So that was just the two that I'd noticed there. The only other thing I had to mention was the Clippy, played by Joy Allen, who also appeared in Guerrilla Warfare as the lady with the pram. I don't know if you remember that episode. I think that's one you said that you're not keen on in the past, Tony.
That's not one I watch very often, Guerrilla Warfare. Can't picture that at the minute.
They're on the hunt for the gorilla, and they're going down a road, and there's a woman with a pram, and I believe they think it's a trick by the opposition who they're playing against. They think it's
yes.
So they just carry on straight past. But yeah, that was a 1974 episode, so that was after A Soldier's Farewell, I believe. Anything else, Tony, that you particularly liked about this episode?
When they're listening to the national anthem and they're playing the German one, I love the couple of seconds delay before Mannering realises actually it's the German one. He's standing proudly to attention to the German national anthem for a couple of seconds, which is done quite well.
He's not the only one. It took a little while for me to realise as well when I first saw that, I remember.
We've got the Vicar and Mannering playing musical chairs.
Yeah, don't like that too much.
I don't usually like slapstick, but this one is done quite well. And it's the Vicar's facial expressions as he wins and he gets the chair.
No, good old Frank Williams.
You don't like that bit. And we've already mentioned the bulge in the bunk beds.
Mrs. Mannering's bulge.
A rare sight of Mrs. Mannering. A couple of comments. I don't know if we mentioned that 17 million viewers for this, it says in my book.
Yep.
She's very large.
Yeah, compared to today's TV audiences, that's a phenomenal number of viewers, yeah.
The cinema is, the book also says, the book, it's, what am I getting? I'm getting this from the Dad's Army scripts. The cinema is the Palace Cinema in Thetford, and I'm wondering if, I guess it still exists, we'll have to go and find out, see if that's still there.
Well, perhaps that's something that someone can email us. I mean, that would be very old now. But if the building is still there, then if you're aware of that, then please email us in and let us know.
During the dream sequence, which isn't my favourite bit, I was interested by the sides, the two sides, the French and the English sides. On the English side, we've got Fraser and Hodges, who always give Mannering jip anyway throughout the whole Dad's Army, and Wilson, who we know sometimes hankers after Mannering's job at the bank. So the way they split up the characters in the dream sequence is pretty much as you would split them up in real life, if I can say in real life.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I hadn't thought of that, and yeah, I think you're quite right. There must have been some decision taken there as to who's going to be on whose side.
James, you know the film clip at the start?
Yes.
Is it a genuine one?
No. Definitely not. It's been staged, and the actor is actually given a name. The actor who plays Napoleon is actually given a name, and the character's name is Charles Boyer. The person who plays it is an actor called Robert Gillespie.
Okay, and Greta Garbo is meant to be the other one.
Yeah, she's played by Joan Savage.
Okay, you know.
Okay.
A couple more questions for you, if I may.
All right. Okay.
Dutch uncle, what's that?
Dutch uncle is where someone acts as a surrogate relative of some kind, even when they've got no relation to each other. So if I was to give you lots of advice about something quite personal, I could be said to be acting in the capacity of a Dutch uncle.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. I don't need any advice at the minute, though.
Good.
Anyway. What are bismuth? Bismuth tablets?
Indigestion tablets.
Indigestion tablets. Okay, last one I got here. Mannering. No, not Mannering. During the dream sequence, I think it's Fraser says, good news, Blucher's arrived.
Pardon?
Who is Blucher?
Blucher? No idea.
Wilson responds something about, well, we don't need a piano or something. Piano playing, but...
Right, okay, they're referring to Walker's character, aren't they? They're referring to Walker's character when he comes up and says, you've lost a ruddy battle, mate. That's what he says, and maybe they're talking about, oh, we don't want a piano, meaning that, you know, this character has got spiv tendencies because he is Walker. maybe that's the answer. I don't know who the character is that they refer to, though, Blucher.
The only other funny thing I can think of is Wilson slapping Mannering on the back when they're getting just a bit too cosy.
Yes.
After the toasted cheese supper. And just as they quickly cut away from that, but you just see Mannering looking rather cross because he's been slapped hard on the back by Wilson.
Well, again, that's Wilson letting himself go a little bit too much, but I think it's still a very good moment. All that's left, really, then, is for me to rate it, because you rated this earlier on, you gave it a 5, and I think I will also give it a 5 out of 5. I don't think Dad's Army got much better than this in its entire run. As I said, feel free to email us in if you disagree. I would definitely go along with you there, Tony, and give this a 5 out of 5.
Mr. Brown goes off to town on the A21, but he comes home each evening and he's ready with his gun.
That's it for this podcast. Our next featured episode will be Guerrilla Warfare, the TV episode, no radio plays for that one, coming up soon. Please don't forget the BBC 7 Listen Again facility that's on the BBC website, where they're putting out the radio plays on Fridays. Also, please don't forget our own email address, warmingtononsea333@yahoo.co.uk, for any feedback. James says that our podcasts come alive when we receive feedback from any listeners that we are lucky enough to have. So I don't know what our negative feedback person, Nathan, will think about that. Anyway, we're off to the stage play in Stevenage. We'll have seen that by the next time we speak. And if you've been to see the stage play, we would love to get feedback from you on that. That's all for now. See you in a couple of weeks' time.
Do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler? If you think old England's done.
Stupid drummer boy.
Well, John Snag is sounding a little bit like James and Tony there, but no, that's rubbish.
It's all right. Moving on, we've got another news item. Oh, no.
An item?
I need to record that again.